Good morning again. We now have Morales v. Jones. Mr. Smolkowitz.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning.
Good morning.
As the Court is well aware, we have three issues presented in this post-trial appeal in this matter. The first of those issues addresses the substantive question of whether the speech that was the basis for the plaintiff's civil rights claim is protected by the First Amendment. It is our position that neither Officer Kolotsky nor Officer Morales, now Lieutenant Morales and Detective Kolotsky, that neither of them spoke as a, quote, citizen, close quote, as has been established by Garcetti and made clear by it.
Mr. Smolkowitz, forgive me for interrupting so early, but I really need to know this. Did you request a hearing or submit any affidavits on the issue of the officer's official duties? What I'm trying to get at is this. Do you think that we can decide on this record whether the officers were speaking as citizens?
The short answer to your question is no, we did not request an evidentiary hearing on that issue for a couple of reasons. First of all, of course, Garcetti was decided after the trial.
Yeah, sure. But the district court certainly seems to have anticipated the Supreme Court's ruling in Garcetti and made some fact findings on whether the officers were speaking as citizens or employees. And, of course, found that they were speaking as citizens. So,
well, the first element standing there, of course, the second element is we did ask the district court in our motions after verdict to withhold any decision in this matter pending the decision in Garcetti. And the district court refused to do that, apparently. It decided the motions after verdict in February. It proceeded to reach those conclusions without the benefit of knowing the parameter of the issue. Thirdly, I think, Your Honor, I would submit that the question is answered on the evidence that was presented at the trial. These are officers who were involved, specifically directed, apparently, according to their testimony or testimony of others, to involve themselves in the investigation and location and arrest of Vincent Ray on open warrants. All of what they did was connected to that investigation and was a logical portion of it, was on the job, on duty, going to the district attorney also and pursuing the prosecution.
Yeah, but it seems to me the Supreme Court in Garcetti said it was not yet faced with articulating a comprehensive framework for defining the scope of the employee's duties in cases where there was room for serious debate, because the parties in Garcetti had agreed that the memo was written pursuant to the plaintiff's employment duties. So, you know, do you think this is a case where there's room for serious debate?
Notwithstanding what the district court may have thought, I don't think there's any room for debate here, Your Honor. I think there may be room for debate if you looked at earlier analysis and said, well, it had to be something that this officer did every day. It had to be a low-level kind of administrative, almost ministerial sort of function, something that the officer didn't have to think about, something that the officer confronted on a daily basis. In some senses, what these officers did in terms of getting evidence that there was somebody else who may have been involved, been aware of these people, or Vincent Ray's being wanted on warrants, may have been involved in knowing where he was, and may have been involved in a law enforcement matter. I would submit, Your Honor, that's a common kind of issue for, it's certainly not a virtually non-existent kind of set of circumstances where somebody is not allegedly protected by someone in power.
Well, what is the officer's remedy if they're demoted for truthfully and accurately reporting possible wrongdoing by their supervisors? See, this case seems different from other public employee speech cases because the officers were relating the facts as they knew them. They were not giving an opinion. You know, they weren't involved in subjective speech, it seems.
Well, Garcetti, of course, had that element to it. I mean, Garcetti had the element of not only Mr. Ceballos, and I hope I'm not mispronouncing his name, investigating and forming an opinion about whether the search warrant was based on untruthful statements, but he was actually investigating, gathering facts, looking at the scene. He obviously had to write out in his memo what the facts were as he perceived them and then draw his opinion. So I don't think the distinction, or I would submit that the distinction between opinion and fact-finding is insignificant there. The officers are, they did a couple of things. First of all, they obtained some information, some allegations. They turned out to be completely unsubstantiated. They didn't investigate them further, but they certainly recounted them to their superiors and then to the district attorney by way of explaining the missing document that Lieutenant Morales, Officer Morales, had to account for as part of the discovery and as part of the prosecution efforts.
You know, you argue in your brief that Morales was obliged under department policy to report allegations of potential criminal acts. And you also seem in the brief to be conceding that investigating the truth of those allegations against the chief and deputy was not within Morales' duties or, you know, his powers. That's at the third page of the third paragraph of page 14 is what I'm referring to. But see, it seems to place him in a rather bizarre catch-22 because he's required to report the allegations, but he's not allowed to investigate whether the allegations are legitimate or scurrilous. And then he can be disciplined for truthfully reporting the allegations that turn out to be scurrilous. So, I mean, what was the proper course of action for him under department policy? The guy seems to be in between a rock and a hard place.
Well, he's not between a rock and a hard place. He has an obligation not to ignore the allegations. He has an obligation to deal with them, and he has an obligation to address them. I would submit, as a matter of fact, Your Honor, if there is a statement that you construe at page 14, I assume it's in the reply brief, but perhaps it's in the original brief, but the lack of an obligation may extend to him investigating direct allegations of harboring a felon, or more specifically, whether the chief and deputy chief violated a department policy. That would be beyond his purview. But if it comes to these officers' attention that someone in a position of authority, like a police officer, has been present with Vincent Ray at the time that the warrants were open and at the time the officers were looking for him, it is incumbent on them, in terms of investigating the bail jumping charge, to look into those facts and to figure out them and to report them. And hypothetically, as I think we explained in the reply brief, let's say, for example, they had questioned Vincent Ray, and they did. Detective Link did. It's not reflected anywhere in the statement. It's Exhibit 6, and I think it's like about, I'm going to guess, the fourth or fifth page in Exhibit 6 where you'll find Vincent Ray's statement. There's no statement about him. Was he with Deputy Chief Ray? Did anybody tell him the warrants were taken care of? Did anybody tell him the warrants would be taken care of? But it's important on an intent issue like that to have explored this, and that would directly relate to not investigating the chief for misconduct. That's something they can't do. But investigating the chief, investigating the situation as part of the charge of bail jumping. So I think, getting back to your answer, he's not really in a rock and a hard place. He's got certain obligations, or they have certain obligations here. And this was all part of their job. There's nothing that they can point to in terms of trying to portray these or make these statements ultimately for the purpose of just simply trying to expose wrongdoing or corruption or anything of that sort. Of course, that wasn't the case. The investigation of the district attorney's office, which would only took a short while, revealed that there was no substance to these allegations.
You know, I'm not much into hypotheticals normally, but I have one for you. Assume that a police officer comes home one night to find his front door wide open and his television missing. A neighbor comes up to him and says, I saw the burglar breaking into your house, but he looked a lot like the chief of police, so I didn't call the police. Is the officer acting as a citizen when he calls the police to report the burglar?
I think there probably would be need to be further facts in the hypothetical for me to answer it straight. But let me, with what you have given me, Judge Rovner, I think the answer to your question is, if that's all that happens, is that officer comes home, he's got a report from a neighbor, and he calls somebody at the police department and says, somebody's broken into my house, I want to file a complaint, just like anybody else. And in the process of doing that, says my neighbor recounted that it was somebody who looked like the chief, I think he's acting as a citizen.
Okay, so is he acting as a citizen when he repeats to the investigating officers or to the district attorney what his neighbor said to him about the chief of police possibly being the burglar?
The answer to your question is he is, but
he's acting as
a citizen,
what's different here?
What I want to do is change the facts of the hypothetical to show you why. If he had, instead of coming home at the end of his shift, had come home during the lunch hour, and he was still on duty, and he had come upon the burglar, and the burglar looked to him like the chief of police, and then he also talks to the neighbor, and the neighbor says the same thing, and that officer is investigating that crime. He doesn't ask anybody else to investigate it. He's within the scope of employment. He is within the scope of his official duties. And that, I would submit, is what this case looks like.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Markowitz. Mr. Retko?
Good morning. Attorney Bill Reckon, I represent Alfonso Morales and David Klotzke in this matter. First of all, I'd like to start out with the issue that we've been discussing, which is the Garcetti ruling. This case, as repeated by several courts throughout this country since Garcetti has been issued, that any time you're employed to do drug investigations like my clients were involved with, whistleblower to blow the whistle on the chief of police and the deputy chief of police is certainly not within the scope of your employment. The reason is that for First Amendment purposes, employment duties do not encompass reporting misconduct of higher-ups to persons to a separate government agency for them to investigate, and that's what occurred in this particular matter.
But do you believe we can decide this issue on the record that we have? What I've been thinking about is, do you think a remand would be appropriate so that the district court could develop the record and determine under, you know, Garcetti standards? As I noted, and of course Mr. Smokowitz agrees that the district court did sort of, you know, take into consideration what he thought the Supreme Court would be doing in Garcetti.
I don't think a remand is appropriate. I believe the record, much like Mr. Smokowitz says, is enough for this court to make a determination. And the reason I say that is, in records 143, page 365, the chief of police testifies. I asked the question, did it even enter your mind for disciplining Officer Morales for talking to the district attorney? His response was no. You know, I thought about, and I didn't know it was Officer Morales, but I thought, what would I do if I were in the position where someone had told me the chief of police had possibly been involved in criminal activity? To a minor degree or a major degree, what would I do? I don't know. I asked myself that. What, would I go back and tell somebody within the police department? No. I think if the officer felt that was the place that he needed to reveal any information he had, the district attorney's office was an appropriate place for it to happen. The district attorney has investigators that have arrest powers that could send out to investigate. Obviously, the district attorney, the deputies, can do some investigation themselves or inquiries themselves. So basically what he's saying is he's confirming what Officer Morales testified to, that as police officers, and they were police officers at that time, the lowest ranking officials in the department, they had no ability to investigate the chief or deputy chief on potential acts of misconduct. The only thing they could do was act as citizens, much like witnesses do, in reporting the information to the appropriate authority.
Yeah, but would you concede that there was a departmental policy that required officers to report allegations of potential criminal acts?
I concede there is a department policy that requires generally law enforcement officers to report acts of criminal misconduct. But was it their duty to investigate? Was it their duty to report? The question is, this court's already dealt with that issue in Delgado prior to Garcetti, where it said that, and Garcetti deals with this in and of itself. Garcetti court basically says, listen, in situations where you can't make overly broad job descriptions. What we're looking at is the practical aspects. Is that something somebody would be expected to do? Would these officers be expected to take that information, do an investigation, and come to some conclusion? The only thing they could do as citizens, and all citizens have that obligation to report crime when they see it, is to go to the appropriate authority and report it.
Let me ask you this, Mr. Redko. You say on page 33 of your brief that the primary mission of the VCD was to arrest people involved in drug transaction or drug possessions.
That's correct.
Yeah. And then you cite the view of the chief in your argument a few moments ago. Let me, if I can, cite to you what Officer Morales testified about VCD officers.
Yes.
They investigate drug investigations from start to end, are involved in surveillance, the recovery of evidence, the execution of search warrants, interrogations, processing these arrests through the district attorney's office, requesting the district attorney's office for advice on certain methods to utilize on investigations, completing it through the court system, whether it be a trial or through guilty pleas. Now, wouldn't you suggest that his, that is Officer Morales' description of official duties seems not quite as limited as your description in brief on page 33. I mean, I'm giving you his words of view of his responsibilities. Now, maybe they're not quite accurate, but that's what he said. And when he spoke to the district attorney, he did speak in his capacity as a VCD officer, didn't he?
Yes, but not all, and Garcetti also says this, that not all speech made during the course of your job, even related to your job, is covered as an official duty.
We have an altered universe. I mean, there's a pre-Garcetti and a post-Garcetti, and we're in the post-Garcetti mode. And I understand the limiting or cautionary language that Garcetti suggests for the future. All Supreme Court cases tend to, you know, leave a little room for those inferior courts to work with. But and I want to hear you on that.
Thank you.
But I do want to tell me why Garcetti hasn't altered the universe in with regard to Officer Morales' view of official duties.
Because in this particular case, the information he supplied to the district attorney about Chief Jones and Monica Ray had no connection at all to the drug investigation with Vincent Ray. The defendant's position that there's some intent element that had to be proved on the jail or the bond jumping is just totally incorrect. You look at the Wisconsin statutes, and here's how the procedure works. Vincent Ray, in April of 1997, as we look at trial exhibit number 2 at pages 1 through 4, basically he had 2 arrest warrants, okay? He was released on a recognizant bond under Wisconsin statutes. What ends up happening is that he's got to be ordered to go before the judge before he's released. And at that time, the judge tells you the terms and conditions of why you're being released and how you have got to come back here. He was released in April of 1997. Here he is in March of 1998 in violation of his bond because he never reappeared on his recognizant bond in the court. where he was ordered to come back to by the judge who told him he had to come back here on a felony warrant. And here he is 11 months later, still outstanding. And there's orders to extradite him back to Greene County for prosecution. And those orders are not only to extradite within the state of Wisconsin, but to adjoining states. There was no need to prove any intent element like the defendant suggests, because the intent element was the judge telling him, come back here on this particular date. He blew the judge's order off over a year ago. The only way that could have been done was by intent, and it's a felony warrant. So there was no intent needed. So there was no investigation for these officers required. When Officer Morales was speaking to the district attorney about the allegations he and Officer Klotsky discovered, it was potential misconduct in office by the chief of police and deputy chief of police that was in no way connected to their investigation into Vincent Ray, either for the open warrants or for the drug investigation they were conducting on him. And moreover, the chief's testimony during trial was very explicit that the only reason he did an internal investigation on these officers was just to see if their conversation with Mr. Malarkey uncovered anything that would have followed up the drug investigation.
Ms. Reckle, let me ask you this. Judge Rovner posed an interesting hypothetical. And obviously pointed up the stress connected with reporting misconduct in a police department. Do you make anything of the fact that we're dealing with a paramilitary organization here as opposed to what Garcetti had, a district attorney situation?
No, and the reason I say that is the hypothetical Judge Rovner posed is pretty much identical to what happened here. That officer coming home, seeing his own home broken into, he can't investigate it. He has no ability to investigate the crime on his house. He's got to report it to other people like citizens.
He caught a felon leaving across the lawn with the TV set. He could pursue.
If he was there and the felon's walking out of the house with the TV set, that's a different thing.
Well, I mean, we do have this 24/7 phenomena of the police officers in most jurisdictions. I mean, you are all the time.
You're always on duty.
Right, and that, of course, I think. That's why I asked you whether the paramilitary setting would perhaps alter it from another fact pattern here.
I also suggest to you that the paramilitary setting is the very reason why these officers couldn't have investigated it, because you can't investigate your boss for a crime. You've got to take it to an independent agency for review.
As we've had in some jurisdictions problems with labs. And as a drug officer, not only you want to make arrests, but you want convictions.
Yes.
And you suspect it isn't specific to a particular set of four or five investigations you have as a VCD officer, but you are worried about the department's lab for purposes of not just performance, but suggesting that there may be a misconduct connected with tests. Now, so it indirectly or maybe directly could affect your capacity to effectively assist in the prosecution and arrest and prosecution of cases. Would speaking to that be outside your official duties? Speaking to the lab performance, corrupt lab performance?
Well, there are similar situations to that. The Walters versus County of Maricopa case that came out in, August or September, District of Arizona case, kind of talks to that in some respects. And that judge in Arizona came to the conclusion that, first of all, anytime that you're complaining to an independent governmental agency, it's a right guaranteed to all citizens regardless of your employment status as a public employee. And that particular court was that's the Freitag versus Ayers court, the Ninth Circuit decision that was issued in September. And they cite to Pickering, 391 U.S. at 568. And that's what my clients were doing here. They're going to an independent agency because they don't have the wherewithal internally to do anything about it to investigate. All they're doing is citizens.
It's independent in a structured legal sense, but is the district attorney independent from a VCD officer, and when they really work is teammates on a whole lot of issues, right?
district attorney has no authority over my clients in any supervisory role whatsoever, and that's
they
the distinguishing
together.
Point.
The question was, do they work together?
Well,
the answer
they work
they
together
to
on cases, hand in hand, in prosecuting cases.
They have to work together is the answer, as simple as you can.
Well, sure.
Having occupied some positions of prosecution for a number of years, I worked with police officers constantly.
Absolutely. But that doesn't have you, you didn't have any supervisory authority over those
police
officers.
No, but I had authority to stop for an investigation.
Yeah, and that's what could have happened here. Officer Morales went and disclosed the information.
I could have asked the police department to proceed with an investigation, too.
That's correct.
That's a, well, not particularly a form of supervision, it's a form of direction, and they have to do what I said.
But in this particular case, what happened was Officer Morales supplied the information to the district attorney.
Right.
The district attorney conducted their own investigation.
Yes, but that happens on a regular basis, constantly.
True.
Yeah.
But they're an independent agency, aside from the police department?
Yep, up to a point.
But to a big point, and in this particular case, the main point is...
No arrest is going to go forward if the prosecuting authorities don't want to.
That's correct.
And the decision as to whether to proceed is one the prosecutor makes based on information furnished to him, generally speaking, by police officers or other agencies involving in law enforcement.
In this particular case, the district attorney didn't rely on that information. He went out and conducted an investigation.
He would do that in any event.
Not in any event.
Yeah, in any event. If he didn't have the wherewithal, he didn't think he had sufficient from what he was getting, he could go to turn to another agency. He can use his own agencies. They do it constantly.
Yes, that's true. But
they
he would have made
Milwaukee,
some decision.
Make the decision and proceed forward. And if he thinks it's too sensitive for the police officer to proceed with his investigation, he may take it over himself.
Correct, and that's
and but that's still part of the police function, doing what police are supposed to do.
And the same would hold true for any citizen that went to the district attorney and reported information directly to the district attorney of the crime. That's all my clients were doing was as citizens reporting what they knew to the district attorney. The district attorney could handle that however he deemed appropriate.
He would
and
treat,
that's what happened
he would
here.
Treat the citizen's complaint considerably different than he would treat the police complaint for a whole bunch of reasons, but never...
Well, there's no way to distinguish my clients in this particular situation from any other citizen.
Hmm.
There's no way to distinguish that. Any other citizen could have went to the district attorney. Mr. Mularkey
could have
gone to the district attorney. Mr. Mularkey could have gone to the district attorney and said, listen, I've got this information, but he didn't have all the information my clients had. Thank you.
Mr. Smokowitz?
Perhaps I'll start with the last point that the court was addressing, and that's what Lieutenant then Officer Morales was doing. He wasn't just coming to the district attorney's office with a complaint about some misconduct by the chief. He was actually walking in there on duty, on the job, on the clock, bringing an arrest warrant or bringing an arrest for prosecution of Vincent Ray. And in the course of that, let's not forget what the facts are. The facts are he doesn't talk about these allegations until the district attorney asks him, where's the pedigree? Where's the document that you have to provide me as part of your job? And that's when the answer comes out, well, the pedigree's not here. We can't find it. Let me tell you all the stuff about, what the deputy chief supposedly said and how she didn't want her name, and by the way, the chief and the deputy chief may have been in his presence, and la and la. But aside from that, what he should have also would have had to have done there at some point, what they would have had to do is they would have had to say, or they should have said, and this gets back to this intent issue, whether it's 11 months or not, if Vincent Ray comes home one day and his sister is there and his sister says to him, you know, Vincent, just like his lawyer maybe, Vincent, I've taken care of the arrest warrant. Don't worry about it. And if Vincent Ray gets arrested and he says, well, my sister 9 months ago or 10 months ago told me, don't worry about it, I took care of the warrant. Plus, on top of that, there's another fact that's sort of inconvenient for the plaintiffs here. Even the parole officer didn't know about this warrant being out there. This is a warrant, by the way, for failing to appear on a charge of passing bad checks. That's the felony warrant. even the parole officer didn't know about it. But if the parole officer had known about it, and he had said to the parole officer, what should I do about this? And the parole officer had said, I'll take care of it, and didn't. There again, this is all connected not to some just generalized public concern as a citizen, not just somebody saying, I'm concerned about what the chief or the deputy chief are doing. This is all part of what's on the clock on time. And getting back to the concern about a remand, I'm afraid, Your Honor, what would happen potentially in a remand is you would get varnished versions of these kinds of these incidents where you might be concerned about the department saying, well, this is our job description. And then you might get the, this is not part of my job description on the response. You have a record before you where, Judge Flom has pointed out, Officer Morales has described what his duties were in general. All of what they did and all of what they talked about fell within the scope of those duties, what he defined.
Your position, Mr. Smolowitz, that because the seminal conversation occurred during the time frame of being involved in official duty, therefore any conversation would have to be in the line of duty. It could never be a citizen's comment because he's wearing the, well, it wouldn't matter if he's wearing a uniform, but on the clock, as you said.
I admit that that would be too broad, Your Honor. Certainly this court, in an earlier case, talked about a situation of an officer having chit-chat with somebody he had just arrested. Right. Not every statement on the clock is going to be protected. But it's more than that here. It's connected to the very thing that they have been specifically tasked, even if they're normally vice control officers, they've been specifically assigned by their own testimony here, by their chief, to go find Vincent Ray on this warrant. It's all directly connected to what they're doing, their investigation. Thanks very much, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thanks to all counsel. Case is taken under advisement.